Good morning. As we begin this morning, I'd like for us to go back together, about 3,500 years ago, to join Moses in the desert. As you think about it, we're going to recall a brief story that many of us know. Moses had lived a long life by that time, was up in years and had seen lots of interesting things. But he saw something that day that he had never seen before, and something that was going to change the course of his life as well. You may have guessed where we're headed, and that is to Exodus chapter 3, where we're going to briefly look at the account of what we often refer to as the burning bush. Exodus chapter 3, first, let's read the first five verses together. In the first verse, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God." I want to pause there for a moment and mention a couple of things. One of the things I like in the last half of the verse, it uses a particular word. It says he led the flock to the back of the desert. One of the things I notice, it doesn't say he drove them to the back of the desert. It says he led them to the back of the desert. I want to touch on that a little bit later in the lesson, but you might take that and keep that in mind right now. As we put thoughts together, sometimes there are certain words we may use to convey a thought. And the same thing is true as the Bible is written. He led the flock to the back of the desert. I also notice he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. It's going to be interesting to note that he's going to come back to Horeb later on. And we'll touch on that in just a moment too. Let's continue on with verse 2. "And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush did not burn. So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses, and he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." Moses, I believe, had been a man of God before. Exactly how much God had directly spoken to him, we don't know for sure. But certainly here he speaks directly to him. He'd probably never been told to take his shoes off before in this way. He'd probably never been told before that where he was standing was holy. Now, most of us know the remainder of the story, but I will come on down and pick up three key verses that kind of help convey the message that God was giving Moses and the role that he was now to play. Coming down to verse 10, we'll look at verses 10 through 12. "Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? And so he said, I will certainly be with you. And this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." Kind of an interesting thought to think of there, that he's going to come back and to serve God on that mountain. As you think about that for a moment, as Moses met God here at the burning bush, he was with a flock of sheep. He would later return with a flock of hundreds of thousands of people and receive the commandments at this same Mount Horeb, which is also known as Mount Sinai. But I thought it was valuable here in this third chapter to notice where it said, that is a sign that I'm going to make with you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. As we think about this and we appreciate what we have, this morning, one of my role is to basically discuss with you Moses, the leadership that Moses had of sheep, and how that may have also related to him in leading the people of God. The exact title is The Leadership of Moses from a Shepherd's Perspective. Now, it's the idea is that I've been a shepherd in my life too. Now, admittedly, it's been a while since I've handled sheep. When I was a child, we raised sheep, so I mean, I've had my experiences. But believe it or not, I left home over 30 years ago, so the experiences that I have are all from memory. And for many of you, I probably have more experiences than you, but there's probably a few that may still be raising sheep. So if I am saying something that you're thinking at times, well, that could be said a little differently. I apologize for that, but in general, I'm probably one of the experts in the group because there's not a whole lot of shepherds among us. But I'd be kind of a young shepherd, but I was shepherding sheep at home. But as I bring these lessons, some of the things I want us to think about, they're going to be things that we can take value from Moses as a leader, that we can take value also for ourselves, for those who may be leaders. But one of the things I want us to remember and think about, I'm not trying to focus this just on people who are leadership positions, but whether you're 60 or 70 and older and leadership positions at the home, in the family, in the church, or at work, or whether you're 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 years old, you can still learn some things that we're going to find out from Moses that we'll talk about. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and put 5 key ideas on the board that I'm going to start with, if I can get the right, go in the right direction here. All right. I know we got markers here somewhere, right? Right on the top of the podium, okay? Under my Bible, no wonder. Okay. All right. Here's 5 things we are going to spend some time with. One of the first things we're going to talk about is, in terms of dealing with sheep, one of the first things you learn is patience. We're also going to talk about protection. Moses learned protection while protecting sheep. It's also very valuable in terms of leadership and in terms of our own life, too. The next one I'm going to mention is provision. So I had my 3 P words. And provision is very important too in terms of providing certain things. A shepherd needs to provide for the flock. But also, as I thought about it, there were a couple of other words that I found to be very valuable in this whole idea too that I wanted to make sure I included. And that is gentleness. One of the aspects that I believe sheep can certainly help teach us is the idea to be gentle. And again, we'll touch on that in a few minutes. And then down here, I'm also going to use the idea of being led rather than being driven. So I'll write not driven here. So those are some things we'll come back to in a couple of minutes and develop. Right now, I'll switch gears for a moment and just give some general observations of my own experience with sheep first. And I think hopefully it'll be kind of providing or moving in these directions too. But this part will be a little bit more just general, and then we'll get more into the organized aspect of it. One of the things I remember from sheep is that they certainly appreciate routine. As long as things are the normal routine, in my own experience anyway, sheep were pretty easy to care for. With us, we had around our house and our barn, we had a small lot of about 5 acres and kind of a barn lot as well. During the winter, we would probably, from what I remember, we'd keep the gate shut, so they kind of had that 5 acres, the lot there that they could be around. And also at night, they would come up, and they would be in that 5-acre lot, or there are times of the year we would make sure we put them in the shed. These aspects are definitely related to the protection piece of it. We also, just to the north of that, had about a 40-acre field, a 40-acre pasture, if you will. So during the spring, summer, and winter, the sheep were free to go. You know, we'd open the gate back up and they could go out during the day. It seemed like, from what I remember, most nights, they would come up on their own. So before, around dark, they'd make their way back up. And especially at times that we would be putting them in the shed. Well, I would mention we had a machine shed, didn't have a whole lot of equipment in there, so that's usually where the sheep would spend the night. Sheep were pretty easy to get into the shed, as long as you had a bucket of feed or a bale of hay, and you'd walk, take it, and they'd be happy to follow you right in. Not a problem at all. So usually, as I said, as long as things were normal, all went well. There wasn't that much patience needed in that sense. But then there were times that the abnormal happened. For instance, every spring we sheared the sheep. And so to put them in the barn to shear the sheep was a little bit more of an adventure. That wasn't where they were used to going. There were times, of course, that the vet needed to come or other things would happen, and you need to bring them in. But what you'd try to do is kind of put a little fence around so you could have a smaller enclosure. First, you tried to get them into the smaller enclosure, and then you tried to get them into the barn. One of the reasons you'd get them into the smaller enclosure
is because sheep can be pretty jumpy at times. They can be very easily spooked, if you will.
This is where the gentleness comes in. You know, when you're taking hay and you're leading them somewhere, they're happy to follow. But when you're trying to get them somewhere where they're not used to going, you need to have a very gentle nature about you. A gentle voice, no flapping of the arms or major movements. Now, driving cows is a little easier in that regard. You could yell at a cow may respond or may not. If you yell at a sheep, the sheep's going to take off on you. So the idea of being quiet, the idea of not sharp movements, and you may get the sheep to go where you want it to go. What you really wanted is you wanted the first sheep to go in the right spot. Once the first one went in the barn, the others would be pretty, they'd follow real quickly. But on the other hand, if you had one that for whatever reason wanted to take off the other way, it didn't take very long for all of them to be right there too. Even if you would try to cut off the second or third one, that fourth one was determined to get by. So what I've noticed, or just with that, I think people are a lot the same way. If you get the first or second or third person doing the right thing, people tend to do that too. But if the first, second, or third person is out here doing something else, people tend to follow that as well. There's lots of observations that could be made about sheep in that sense. But those are some of the things that I consider and remember along the way. So let's start here with the idea of patience. Moses learning patience as a shepherd. Have you really thought too much about how much patience Moses needed to lead the children of Israel? It became very apparent very quickly how much patience he needs. I want to point out a few passages. The first one I'll consider, I'm going to go to Exodus chapter 14. If you want to be turning with me there, feel free. Exodus chapter 14. Now, all of us probably remember that, of course, as God had established Moses to go and lead the children of Israel out, as he came to Pharaoh, Pharaoh wasn't real, he wasn't real flexible and easy to work with, believe it or not. He turned him down. He turned him down many times, and as we know, there were ten plagues. Upon the tenth plague, Pharaoh relented and allowed the children of Israel to leave. And as shortly after the children of Israel left, what happened? He sent his men after him again. And here is the first instance then. The children of Israel are barely, I'm not even sure if they're literally out of Egypt yet. They're barely out of the eyesight of the Egyptians. And then, of course, the Egyptians start heading after them. Exodus chapter 14, beginning in verse 10. Looking at verses 10 to 12. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, you have taken us away to die in the wilderness. Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness." So very quickly, the children of Israel, I started to say, had learned to complain. They probably had learned it long ago. But very soon, they were complaining against Moses. Moses had to definitely show a significant amount of patience with that. And we know that God provided a way as Moses held his arms out, or his staff out, and the Red Sea parted. Shortly after they crossed the Red Sea, do you think they started complaining again? Well, here we are in chapter 14. They've seen God deliver them. In chapter 15, we've got a nice song of deliverance that they're focused on. But guess how chapter 16 starts? In chapter 16, in the first three verses, as they journeyed from Elam and came, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt, then the whole congregation of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread in the full, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." So now they were hungry. Did Moses need to have much patience with them? Of course, he called to God, and God began to provide for them manna. But do you think it was very long again before they complained? By the next chapter, they're complaining again. Chapter 17, the first four verses. Then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on the journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and came to Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people contended with Moses and said, "Give us water, that we may drink." So Moses said to them, "Why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and said, "Why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." Of course, God provided in all these instances, and here there was water that God told Moses how to proceed with providing the water. And so God helped in all these instances, and they weren't necessarily complaining against Moses. They were ultimately complaining against God. But he needed great patience with them. And then the last one that I'll mention is while Moses is on the mount receiving the commandments, what do the people do? They decide, they come to Aaron and said, "We don't know what's happened to Moses. And so what we want you to do is make us a God, the one that will lead us the rest of the way." Exodus chapter 32. I'll briefly glance at verses 19 to 22. Exodus chapter 32, beginning in verse 19. Now actually before that is this account here again. The people had come to Moses. Moses had taken their jewelry and other things that had formed a golden calf, or a molten calf, as the word the Bible uses there. They basically said, "This is the God that brought us out. This is the God that's going to take us the rest of the way." God himself was upset with them and spoke to Moses about it. Moses seemed to talk to God and try to plead with him not to destroy the people as God was about to. And then Moses came down the mountain. Exodus chapter 32, beginning in verse 19. And so it was that as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hand and broke them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire, ground it into powder, and he scattered it on the water and made the children of Israel drink it. And Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them?" So Aaron said, "Do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil." Patience. Moses had to have a lot of patience. Now, does patience mean you never get upset? Did Jesus get upset at times when he lived on the earth? Yes. Did Moses get upset here? Were the consequences that the people suffered? Yes. But at the same time, Moses did show patience in all of these and continued to lead the people. And all of this happened within the first 3 months or so. I believe it was 3 months or so that they came to the mountain, and this was another month, so it may have been 4 months or so. But Moses continued to lead them. We're certainly not going to go into any and all accounts of complaints and times of patience on Moses' part. But Moses had to be very patient as leader of Israel. Now, what does that say to us? Some of us here today are leaders. I'm a teacher now, again. You know, as a teacher, I have to be kind of patient too. Not every student that I have is necessarily 100% motivated, believe it or not. We're getting near the end of the year. Some have a hard time turning in homework. Some of them, as a matter of fact, you know, they're sitting there making 57%, 60s passing. You're telling them, "Hey, you know, you're trying to do what you can to prod them, to get them going, to make sure they're doing their homework. It's a matter of making the difference between passing or not passing." Okay, I'll do it. Week passes and no homework comes in. Do I always exhibit as much patience as I could or should? I try to, but it doesn't always. I mean, I get a little frustrated with them at times. In leadership positions in the church, as or wherever you are, as you're leading people, are you going to get frustrated? Are people going to complain? Are people not going to always do the thing that they need to do? Definitely. One of the most important things we need to do, whether leaders or just in regular life, is show patience with people. I look out among us and I see several who are married.
and some younger who have not been married yet, but someday will be.
Do you think your spouse is always going to do exactly what you would want them to do? Or do spouses need to learn great patience with each other?
Success of a marriage is often based on how patient each spouse is with the other.
Brothers and sisters, and here I'm talking about siblings, you know, I was trying to point out that this isn't just about leadership. This is about 10-year-olds. 10-year-olds need to learn to be patient with each other. 10-year-olds need to learn patience in life. Not only Moses of many years ago learned patience with sheep and then with people, but of one of all the lessons we can learn in this lesson and in life, certainly patience with others is vital to it. James chapter 3, verses 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Another passage I'll look at, and this is coming from the King James Version, 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 7. Beside this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience, and to patience godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness charity. All of us, this is something that we've all heard, this is something that we all know, but at the same time, this is something that I would suggest that probably all of us can continue to increase in, patience. Of all the points that we make, that's the one that'll take the most time to develop and spend on, but I think Moses as a shepherd was... He learned patience and certainly needed to provide that as the leader of Israel as well. I'll move to the second area, and that is one of the things that sheep very much need is protection. In our own case, I can remember many... I mean, I never really saw any coyotes at home, but I can remember hearing coyotes at night. I'd be laying in bed with the windows open. You could hear the coyotes out wherever they may be. We didn't always put the sheep in the shed, but we almost always brought them up into the lot close to the house. Coyotes never really got the sheep at all when they were near the house. But over the years, did we lose a few sheep? Yes. So they need to be protected, whether it's from the weather, whether it's from wild animals. Moses, as a shepherd, obviously one of his great responsibilities involved protecting the sheep that was there as well. When the Egyptians pursued the Israelites as they were leaving, and they were complaining, that was the first thing that we read about today. Did Moses protect them? Obviously through God's guidance, as God then told Moses to hold out the staff, the rod over the sea, and the sea parted. That protection was provided in that case. As leaders of the church, as leaders at school, wherever we may be, is protecting those who are under our care, a part of our responsibility? Absolutely. But again, no matter what age we are, is protecting your own health something that's important to do? Whether it's remembering to put your seatbelt on or putting your helmet on, or whether it's protecting people who are riding with you or people who are around you. We need to protect ourselves, but we also protect each other. Why do you think we have... I probably shouldn't say why do you think, but I mean certainly going along with this. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 14 through 18. As we put on the whole armor of God is one of the reasons for that, for protection, that you may stand against the wiles of the devil. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and turn there. Ephesians chapter 6. So as we look at some of these, yes, part of it is dealing with Moses directly. Part of it is dealing with leadership as a whole. And part of it is dealing with life and making sure that we are and see some of the connections that we have in life as well. Ephesians chapter 6, begin in verse 11 for a moment. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. This is about protection in essence. Beginning in verse 14, stand therefore having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, and above all, taking the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints.
Protection. Protection from the devil.
Protection from helping others to be protected as well. All of this,
yes, it relates to sheep. Yes, it relates to leadership.
But yes, it relates to every one of us. We need to protect ourselves and protect others.
The third one that we'll briefly touch on is the idea of provision. And for some would see that and know exactly what that means. Some may look at that and be uncertain exactly what provision is here. Here I'm talking about providing. Now, when you help protect someone, is providing including providing protection? And I would say yes. But here I'm talking more about food itself. One of the things that, of course, Moses needed to do as a shepherd was to find food for the flock. One of the things that leaders do church-wise is, of course, try to instruct the flock, whether they're doing it personally or they have others to provide that instruction. We're talking about whether it's physical food or whether it's spiritual food. All of it is important. I take for instance, and I won't necessarily turn here, God, we've already looked at in the book of Exodus. Right now, I'm still thinking of Moses being on the mount and some of the communication Moses had with God during this time. Not only did God provide him the Ten Commandments, but he also provided the whole covenant, in essence. As a matter of fact, I am going to turn there into Exodus chapter 24. Because, I mean, again, this just reiterates we're not talking about physical food here, but these are the directions that God gave to Moses. And Moses, in turn, spoke to the people. Exodus chapter 24. I want to go ahead and begin with verse 3. So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. Now, when it says all the words, do you think we're talking about the Ten Commandments? Yes. Do you think we're talking more than that? The covenant was given at this time too. But the word of the Lord was given to the people. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord has said, we will do. Verse 4, and Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and he rose early in the morning, and he built an altar at the foot of the mountain, and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. He sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half the blood and put it on the basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant, and he read in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has said, we will do, and be obedient. Key words there. The people agreed to the covenant. All that the Lord has said, we will do. And verse 8 is where we'll finish. Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, this is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. You know, right now we're talking about provision. We're talking about being provided. Does this have anything to do with food? Actually, it does. Has to do with the idea of spiritual food. Moses had received from God the food that he was to give the people. And he had. He had provided the instruction of how they were to live. Not only the commandments, as I said, but he took the book of the covenant and he read the book of the covenant to the people. These are all aspects of this provision that we're talking about. What about us? Whether we are leaders in the church or many of us aren't leaders in the church. One day we may be, one day we may not be. But do we provide some instruction from the Lord as well? One of the things I think about is from the Sermon on the Mount, ye are the what of the world? You're the light of the world. The city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. So as we are the light of the world, are we, in essence, providing God's light? Can we provide instruction to people by the example that we live, as well as directly things that we say and share with people as well? But those are some things that we need to remember and to be a part of. Another one that I'll briefly look at is in Philippians chapter 2, verse 15, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights
in the world. As you and I shine as lights, we also provide God's message to people. Important for us to do and to consider.
And we'll take these last two and kind of plug them in together. We've talked about these first three so far.
Let's also consider briefly the idea of this gentleness and the idea of leading rather than driving.
I don't think we can overemphasize the idea of being gentle when leading people.
First, we've talked about sheep and the idea of the gentleness needed to lead sheep. We're not out here flapping our arms or yelling or doing various things to distract them, but we need to be gentle with them. We need to have a gentle tone. We need to have a gentle manner about us. That's how sheep respond, rather than to sudden movements and to loud voices.
Do people respond in general in the same way? When we get upset with them and we yell at them, do they respond as well overall as more gentle approach? Now, does that mean there's never a time to be a little bit more forceful? Was Moses especially gentle when he came down off the mountain and the people were worshiping a golden calf? So as I say that, there is a time and a place to be less gentle, to be more forceful. We've seen examples. We haven't looked at the example of Jesus in this instance, but we certainly realize that that is in the Bible. But the overriding part of who we need to be as Christians, who we need to be as leaders, and who we need to be as Christians in the world overall, are those of a gentle spirit.
For instance, I think one of the reasons God gave us the Holy Spirit was to help us in terms of gentleness. Why do I say that?
Well, Galatians 5:22 tells us about the fruit of the Spirit. Fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. If you have the Holy Spirit in you and you are letting the Spirit work within us, will gentleness become a part of who we are as well?
I believe the answer is yes. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24. The servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, apt to teach, patient. So we've got both of these in this case, patience and gentleness. James 1:17. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, and without hypocrisy. The wisdom that is from above is pure, it's peaceable, and it's gentle.
Moses lived many years before he began to lead the children of Israel. Some of those years he spent taking care of sheep, and I believe that he developed all of these qualities in doing so: patience, protection, provision, gentleness, and the idea of leading and not driving. I didn't mention that in particular here, but if you remember the very first passage we had looked at, it had mentioned that Moses had led the sheep to the back of the desert. That's what the New King James says. Others may use another word beside back, but into a part of the desert here, he had led them. And I think that's a key word in terms of how we lead people, but also how we interact with people. Not trying to drive them, but leading them gently in a certain direction. These are some of the values that we find from the leadership of Moses. These are some of the values that we can think of if you're in leadership positions today. Any of these and all of these can be applied in this. But even more, each one of us who are here today, that are old enough to hear a lesson and old enough to know what's going on with this, can learn to be patient with our brothers and sisters, with our friends and neighbors. Not only patience, but also the idea of protection and providing and being gentle with one another.
May we remember these, may we think of this, as we are soon to partake of the Lord's Supper, too. Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, who gave his life for the sheep.